You are, George.
All right, can I have a quick snooze before you, Jack, introduces?
Go on.
Cheers, G.
Sweet if Nordic Spirit could sponsor us.
I asked them 3 times. Jen.
Velo.
Never got back to me.
Velo?
Yeah, but I don't like Velo.
No, I don't like Velo.
Pretend to like them, wouldn't you?
Let's do it to spite Nordic
15
Spirit.
15 bags, yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Winners Never Quit podcast. Today I'm again joined by my crewmates, Nutty, Brucey and Adam, and this is part 2, episode 4. Here we go. So, boys, what behaviours in the team will annoy you the most?
Take it away, Brucey.
Oh, let me think. Jack's stroke rate is wildly inefficient. Oh, it might not be wildly inefficient, because he seemed to manage all right when he was rowing by himself. It's wildly difficult to follow as well when Jack's in that stroke seat.
Jack and Brucey both have very different recovery phases. Recovery is in resetting for the next stroke.
What words spring to mind when you consider my stroke rate? Like long and strong, efficient, as long as it can be, considering my height.
Just different tempos. And the problem with Jack's tempo...
Erratic.
Is that
you two are both ugly.
The oars stay back for longer, which means if you're, you know, 0.2 seconds faster, you'll clang oars. And that might sound like an absolutely trivial problem, but it becomes not trivial very quickly.
I think I speak for me and Nutty when I think your stroke rate is lazy, bone idle and arrogant.
There's a word for your stroke rate.
No, honestly, it's fine, boys.
It's called bollocking the slide.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one.
All I'm going to say, boys, is I've got the highest watt output when we've done the 20-minute threshold test. So I guess you two are wrong.
Yeah, he has got us there. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm joking. When you're a solo rower, your stroke rate is completely on your own. So I've never rowed as a two. Brucey and Nutty, you've both done a bit of like crew rowing, haven't you? If I'm wrong,
yeah,
and kayaking,
yeah,
where you have to be in,
you have to be in sync.
Well, ideally, we're in sync on this ocean row as well.
Yeah,
well, for sure. Yeah,
you know, so I'll hold my hands up.
Of practice,
hey boys, I'll hold my hands up. Maybe it's something I need to work on. However, you two can go fuck yourself. Anyway, Nutty, what's the thing that's going to annoy you?
Within the crew, or is it just something on the boat itself?
Both.
Well, you do both.
So. What annoys me whilst
we've got the studio for another 30 minutes, so please do both.
So, I'm taking notes. What annoys me the most is rowing on one side continuously, just one side, for hours and hours.
Oh, mate, we're
going to
get a lot of that in the North Atlantic.
Fucking absolutely threads me out.
It is annoying.
Beam on conditions, mate.
Mainly for the muscle asymmetry in my case.
Because you've got your
right
side's hard lock. So much bigger. Your foot is hard lock to whatever angle you want to point the boat, and you may as well put your hand in your pocket like this and row one-sided and
take the other side out.
Fucking irritating. Yeah,
that is annoying.
No, it is very annoying.
Again, like I was so lucky with mine. Like I never, and apart from like locking the rudder off, so that instead of having the rudder straight, I would like, you know, lock it, say, into the wind, for instance, and then just row. But I never had to like continuously, apart from maybe the odd stroke.
Mm.
So to clarify for the people listening, right, Jack had an auto helm. Like, I also want to ask you about that. Did you use that all the time? So it's like it keeps you on a course electronically, and so you just disconnect your foot steering from the auto helm.
Yeah, so when the auto helm was working, and if you had in the mid-Atlantic, you know, you generally have a following wind, especially once you're past the Canaries, you just have your auto tiller on, you turn it off at night, lock your rudder off. That's what I mean. It was very rare that I would have to like lock my rudder off. However, all four of my auto tillers broke within about 8 days of rowing left. So the last 8 days I had to foot steer.
Okay. Oh, at least you got most of the way over then.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. Again, very, very lucky. But it comes down to your prep, mate. Like, you know, you can't. I knew I wanted to build that redundancy into the system, so I took 4 auto tillers.
Yeah.
How was the Rannoch? I know they're a bit more, it's a different model of boats that we both used.
Yeah.
It's a bit harder to steer because it's got a flat hull. Like ours just runs in a bit more of a straight line because it's got a V-shaped hull.
It's the biggest one when you're trying to row into the wind. All it wants to do is like turn around and catch and catch that wind.
Sounds a bit like sailing, that.
Yeah.
Tell you what, that's something that's annoying. Anytime someone asks me, when are you sailing across the North Atlantic? I wish I was sailing.
Did you boys ever, I used to see on the chart plotter, right, there'd be boats that go past at 6 knots, so there were sailing boats. And like, it always used to thread me out so much more than tankers. I used to look at that and think, fucking hell, I wish I could be going 6 knots.
Yeah. Oh, mate, we saw two that would stand out of my
memory.
Didn't
you get some tinnies?
Yeah, French race yacht came tearing the past and it came over to check us out. I was like, oh, have you got any beers or cigarettes or whatever? I was like, thinking they're French, they must have cigarettes. And it turns out they didn't. And then they gave us free San Miguel's, but the sea was too choppy for us to get alongside. So they put it in a plastic carrier bag and like sort of lassoed it and released it. And then Will caught it miraculously. It's like a professional baseball game. Somehow managed to catch it. And this fucking idiot only gave us free cans. And there's four of us. And it was warm. And it was San Miguel. But I still enjoyed it anyway. And then the other one was like this massive two-masted sort of really fancy, I don't really know about yachts that much, but a proper Swiss sailing boat. Mm. And it was one of these sorts of like people pay for a crossing or something and they're having a real party on there, like all chilling out in like hammocks strung on the mast and that. And I was like, you cunts. No, waving at us. And
it's like, a really hot day as well, so they're pretty scantily clad.
Yeah.
That would be bad, especially if you still had like, what, 20 odd days to go.
Yeah, they meant well. They're trying to shout out their like Instagram name so they could tell us when we got to the other end. Like, yeah, not interested.
I always think that I've seen like crews that come up against, not come alongside, but get within sight range, like super yachts. That's got tough to take, mate. You know, when you're in like a 7 meter boat, looking at this fucking absolute behemoth.
Yeah, it's having fucking caviar on it and shit like that.
Really? What annoys me? So yeah, that annoyed me. That was like a strange thing. Seeing the sailboats go past on the chart plot. And then I think just people being late, you know, I think that would like throw me off. It's like consistently.
Mm. I think there's the important thing is to have a lot of patience with yourself. If someone's like fumbling a bit, taking a while on the changeover, then if you react, the only choice you have is you're faced with is how do I react? If you want to make more tension, you'll be like, yeah, whatever happens, fucking hell, I might be late one time, you never know. But if someone, I don't think in this crew that anyone would really be consistently late because we all sort of selected each other thinking we'd all be good for it. You know, I don't think there's any sort of jackness like that.
Mm. Oh, no, mate, you know.
Yeah, someone's always being late.
You like.
Pretty, you know, but not really on that.
Yeah, because I always think about it like this because I can't work out the maths, but say you are, and this is how I said it to myself on my first crossing, right? So if you're 5 minutes late to every shift.
Yeah.
I used to do, what, 5 shifts a day, so that's 25 minutes. You know, 25 minutes a day times...
Oh, the compound effect.
Yeah,
that
by 100,
huge, yeah.
By 111.
It must have been difficult because you're on your own as well. You're not answering. There's no one impatient to get off the yacht, so you could easily be that little bit lazy, quite...
Yeah.
Whatever, you know. As long as you make it up at the end of the shift, I guess it's all right.
Yeah. My first...
I think, one other thing. It's way easier not to be late when there's someone about to come off as well, because all of a sudden you're not just... like letting yourself down, you're making your mate row longer, which makes it easier to get yourself in gear.
Because you're
eating into their time, then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously, they want to get their head down.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you really do look forward to that, don't you? Especially when it gets into like the vinegar strokes of your like 3 hour shift.
Yeah.
Like the last 20 minutes. That first 2 hours 40.
Someone else is on the vinegar strokes.
2 hours 40 flies by. Yeah. And then that last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah,
I think the thing that obviously you wouldn't have encountered on your row, Jack, that I think only didn't come to a head in the Bahamas, but it was the only time where there was any tension at all, was when there was decision making. Mm. So when we were pulling into Palm Beach and you two had a difference of opinion on where the inlet was, and there was also that night before where Jack and I were like, I was like, Jack, I really think we need a 270 bearing. And you were like, no, we're fine because of the Gulf Stream. It's like... as soon as two people have a difference of opinion, you've got to make a decision. That's when friction can arise quickly as well.
Definitely. Oh yeah, 100%.
But in this, to listen to the, because you've got the final say as skipper.
Yeah,
but you have to listen to everyone's thoughts and then make an informed decision.
And you have to remember that the difference of opinion isn't selfish. Both people want the best possible outcome for everyone.
For sure.
So that as long as it doesn't get, there's a difference between discussing options or flashing at each other for the sake of arguing.
Yeah. But yeah, there'll be times where we have to make difficult decisions and two of us will think one thing and two will think another, or all four of us will think something different. And then when you're, you know, sleep deprived and hanging out, you're like...
it's bound to happen all the time, mate.
Yeah. So it's about managing that effectively.
Because I'll hold my hands up and I thought you were going to mention when we were in the South and I didn't want
to... Oh, yeah, that was good. That was fun.
But I feel like I come round quite, and it was definitely the right decision to leave.
No, you did want to leave. Oh, I don't know.
No, I wanted to stay.
Did you? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I wanted to stay.
You wanted to stay there. But the trouble with that is, it's again managing your own emotions and the relationship on the boat, because if, say, there's a bit of a heated discussion about the options and then you get overridden, you might just be choking on that for half a day before you realise, why am I being so bitter and self-consumed? Yeah, fine, we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Mm. It just feels a bit bad when you're the one that got shut down, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're all not personal.
Yeah, but that's
we're individual, strong individuals. So
yeah, strong characters, mate.
Yeah, characters.
Yeah,
it's quite humbling.
But I think once I had like 10 minutes away, definitely was the right decision to do, because we had plenty in the tank. It literally just over cautious.
There's this catchphrase on that road. Like Jack, he goes through phases. He always uses a catchphrase for a short but intense period. And it was always like, oh, yeah, make hay while the sun shines. And I was like, I'm an incorrigible wind-up merchant. And I was like, Jack, the sun's still shining for another 24 hours, mate. And it's just getting more and more irate. Yeah. And I'm just poking, thinking, this is just fucking
hilarious. We wanted a burger. And Jack was like, no, we don't have time for a burger. If we're going to go, we go now.
No, because that was the thing. I was like, right, they were like, both like, oh, let's go. And I was like, all right, then let's go. And then they were like, oh, but we could go to a Burger King 18 miles away. I was like, no! Flipping tables. No, it wasn't that bad.
Jerk chicken joint 200 metres away.
Yeah. I thought I'd let him have that one.
Yeah.
That really took my time having a fresh shower as well. Jack stormed down the jetty preparing the boat.
You were a few.
And then we all went down and Dad was like, you just had a shower as well. I was like, fine, I'm off back to have a shower.
I remember thinking you were fuming and then obviously left you to your own devices for like 10-15 minutes while we were sorting ourselves out. I was like, you fuming, Jack? You're like, no, everything's fine. Yeah. Definitely wasn't.
No, I was definitely fucking pissed off. Yeah.
But it pulls the biggest watts, so it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I do, to be fair. I absolutely smoke all three of you. Me losing an argument. Yeah, I'm fucking...
Does he know that really? I can't remember what the last one was.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Oh.
What's next?
Don't worry. I definitely know. I do. But yeah, long story short, I was fuming.
What's next, Jack?
What's next? So something a little bit deeper. What are you looking forward to about finding out about yourself on this crossing?
I think it's a great humbling experience. So I'll enjoy that journey of finding out things that I can't do, or finding out things that I can do really well, and also being with three others that I can sort of learn from as well. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, I
think voyage of self-discovery.
We've all done various
voyage of self-discovery. Nice
terminology. We've all done various things over our careers and over the last decade or two where we've pushed our boundaries and got better and more effective in more uncomfortable environments. But I'm not going to speak for you three, but this will 100% be my new limit after this in terms of what I find out about myself in terms of difficulty and tough conditions. So just excited to expand that and, you know, break through that floor or ceiling, whatever you want to call it, of being at your limit and then creating a new limit for yourself.
I just completely agree with what you two have just said. I like, every now and again, I like to put myself in one of these situations and just to see how I react in that situation. And yeah, I guess the more you do it, sort of you've got a bigger capacity to do it, to suffer, you know? It's like, I just hope I react well and when the pressure's on in that moment. But so if there's one moment where I don't, you free will and vice versa, you know? It's like pretty cool like that.
Linking back to the other episode, one thing I'm looking forward to, and that just reminded me of, when I go to sleep, no one will carry on, keep going in the right direction. Because as a solo, that doesn't always happen. That's unreal. What I'm looking forward to, seeing how I like work in a team, because I know I can, you know, in an ocean rowing environment, but the Mid-Atlantic, again, whole different load of challenges to the North Atlantic. So just looking forward to seeing how I work in a team, you know, to and seeing if we can like have that really nice fucking like team experience going across, which I think we will.
I reckon we will, mate. I don't know.
But when what I mean by that is when you're snapped and you're on your own, there's no one to annoy. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like anything that you do bad, like you may make a mistake or something, or you know, like when I tipped over the jet ball on my own hand, like. Mm. Not that all you boys would probably just think, God, what an idiot, but you'd feel sorry for me, you know? So just, just seeing how, like, we operate as, like, operating as a team.
I reckon I'm pretty optimistic about the team dynamics. I think you've got a very direct and confrontational leadership style, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but you have to bear that in mind when we're interacting with each
other. What do you mean? No, I don't get it. I think you're wrong.
You're wrong. No, I think we've all got vastly
got the camera.
Different but synergistic personalities, which obviously showed itself on in the Bahamas, but also like in all of our encounters. And I think, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see how they mold and are all helpful to each other in various scenarios.
Absolutely.
The big thing for me is just safety, really. Like, because there's, you can say, you're being a bit pussers, you're being a bit straight. But for me, it's just like, why take the risk, you know? Because the story that Chris has, I know Preet's already told you, Chris Martin, the guy who's doing our weather routing, like just watching someone's life jacket like float away into the distance, knowing you can't get the boat around, like, it would put a real downer on the crossing for one.
You carry that with
it. Yeah. So that's, and I know probably I can be a bit direct. I don't mean to be, but that's just the big thing for me, I think, safety.
Yeah.
As much as I hate to say that because I'm a classic person like that, fucking health and safety, gosh, just gets in the way.
No, you're absolutely right, mate, because I was, like, people do die on ocean rows, but almost exclusively it's down to error in drill, right?
Yeah.
So, because they've, typically, it's because they become detached from the boat. I think someone recently had a heart attack in the boat. We couldn't be helped anyway, right? Yeah. Probably would have had it anyway. Might not have done. But yeah, the vast majority of times is when people get detached from and they can't get back to the boat. So yeah, if you're going to have one, what's the word when you have one point that you're really keen on making all the time?
Really makes your dick out.
Like if you've got one hill to die on, mate, it's probably a good one.
One hill to die on,
Yeah. I think there's a difference between like unnecessary bureaucratic health and safety, which we all navigate in living in England.
And detest.
I was going with navigate, but detest.
Can't stay on the railway lines.
Exactly. But then there's like, if you don't strap in, you could die. It's very much like, well, probably should.
Mm. Definitely should. Yeah. Another thing as well, I was just thinking about going in. Did you boys, I'm guessing, got out to clean your boat?
Oh yeah, a couple of times, mate.
How often are we doing that?
I was going to imagine it probably won't be that enjoyable.
Three times, I think.
I think we did it once a week, didn't we?
Yeah, thereabouts. If you got a real build-up, I think you didn't get away with doing it less in the North Atlantic. Because it's rougher, and secondly, because the water's slightly colder. So these gooseneck barnacles are the issue that we're talking about. And in the warm water, they grow really quickly. And you give the boat a good scrub with one of them windshield de-icers.
Yes.
Windshield.
Just half a knot difference with the same effort. Quite a significant.
It really is. Very noticeable.
Yeah.
I'll do it just to get a wash in, I reckon.
Yeah.
You'd be sick of salt water by the end of it. Mate.
I know.
Nice for a swim, though.
Yeah. No, it's. What I was going to say, but it is wild, isn't it? The amount of difference it makes. But I was mainly thinking, like, it's a real nice treat in the Mid Atlantic. Mm. In the North Atlantic, that water's going to be frigid.
Yeah.
Think Titanic, Leonardo.
Very true, yeah.
Get any room on that? Door. No, and he just freezes to death.
Yeah.
Fred is.
But hopefully, because of the cold water, it means those fucking shellfish don't grow that quick.
Mm. Yeah.
So maybe we'll get away with doing it a bit less.
We'll see soon enough.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Get some really good antifoul. Yeah. Like that chemical shit, not the copper shit.
Yeah.
What's that?
There's two different antifouls, mate. I think one of them's illegal. Oh, it's like regulated against.
Yeah.
But it's a chemical that's on the bottom of a boat that prevents growth. The other one's like copper dust or something that also prevents growth, but it's not quite as good. But it's legal.
Yeah. Pull up to Southampton. Get
we're going to have to use the copper one.
Bone pounded, mate. David Attenborough's there, mate, on the fucking dock.
Yeah,
to fill us in.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Break the world record and then David Attenborough batters you, mate, for polluting. Guys, that is the end of episode 4. of the Winners Never Quit podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you could like, follow and subscribe to this episode, we'd really appreciate it. And then join us on the last two episodes of this series where we wrap everything up and we should be well on our way.
Are you going to try and like film some sort of episode at sea, mate? Because that'd probably be quite good.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, nice maybe calm like a day,
nice
mate.
Calm day, yeah.
Because we used to brush out on the changeover because two of us don't see the other two very much at all. Like when we had a calm day, we'd just all sit on the cabin and like have dinner and brush our teeth together and sit when it's nice, yeah. Get a bit of a mid-ocean potty in for you.
Yeah. Makes me like, you know when people like think ocean rowing and that, they've got far, you know, waves crashing over the side, krakens and that. Those would just be us, mate, enjoying like a Guinness.
Having, one of these. Like
yeah, we get, yeah. Yeah, we're having, actually not having too much of a bad time. We're getting no donations. Right, no, thank you very much for listening. Like I said, like, follow and subscribe. And that is everything. Cheers, guys.